Curiosity.
Welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast, episode 45. I'm Janice Cunning.
And I'm David Langiuli. And Janice, we have today a very special guest with us, Jennifer Harris. And Jennifer is a good friend and colleague from the fundraising world. She and I have been getting to know each other over the past several months, maybe even over a year now through LinkedIn. And she is a fundraiser. She's a thinker. She's a writer. And I have to say, she is a humanist. I just love that. I love that part of your bio, Jennifer. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Great. So you wrote an interesting article, Jennifer, and published it on the Fundraising Leadership blog site about the shift from doing fundraising to being a fundraiser. So thank you for sharing that with everyone.
Thank you. Thank you for taking time to read it.
Yeah. And we've already been getting a lot of really great response on LinkedIn, some really impressive conversations happening. So this has definitely hit a nerve. And why don't we start, Jennifer, by sort of having you talk about, like, where does this idea come from for you, and what sparked these ideas?
Totally, absolutely. Well, twofold. So what triggered the piece really truly was waking up on a Monday to like 15 different emails that were tips and tactics about how to fundraise. And so I did, as I described in the piece, I did smile initially. I was like, yes, there's so much out there. And then very, very quickly, I kind of started reflecting on how there's so much out there and so much that's not being discussed, particularly in light of that Chronicle piece, which is just one study of many studies that showcased, you know, people are leaving this field in droves. And, go ahead, David. Yeah.
No, it feels like, you know what, it feels like the industrialization of fundraising. That's what is coming up for me. It's like the fundraising industrial complex.
100%.
And you will do it. You'll do it this way, and you'll do it that way, and it'll be like a robot.
You know, it's interesting. Last week, I was with a colleague, and I kept calling it the mechanization of this work. So very, very similar, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I remember being in a fundraising office as a fundraiser when they started to change the language. Like when they started to say, "We've got to build our front line." You know, and I remember that pivot, and I was like, what? So you talk about the humanist in me, like, what is happening here? You know, I always thought I was the conduit to social change in some way, that's why I was doing that work. And then when this sort of approach to mechanizing us, to, you know, making us like a team of robots, if you will, like, and included in how we do the work, right? Like all the metrics. That was over a decade ago when I started to feel that shift. And now it's like, to use Janice's words earlier, I do feel like the pendulum has swung so far, and those tactics, like we no longer have the lack of tactics to lean on as our excuse for why this field is not functioning as it could.
Yeah. And what are you seeing, like, Jennifer, like, you know, I think you're lucky that you get to see a broad range of organizations and interact with a broad range of fundraisers. So what's the impact that you're seeing of this overemphasis on doing?
You know, I think there's a lot of confusion, and I've inferred this in several pieces, but haven't overtly taken on this fact that I think fundraising is sort of like in identity crisis. Like who we are and what we do is not, you know, well defined. In fact, I don't know, and I've said this before, I don't know if we can define it in a way that's universal for organizations. Like when you bring a small social activist organization together with a big hospital or, you know, an academic medical center or a university, like, are, is fundraising defined and operationalized the same way? So I think that there's a lot of confusion. And I think, you know, it's kind of scary for me to say this, but I think in many ways, consultants, which I am, don't often help, you know, we can perpetuate a myth that fundraising looks a certain way when it in fact is different across organizations and across like individuals who are the conduits to fundraising, you know, who are the fundraisers.
What I think has not changed is that at least let's set aside transactional, what I would describe as transactional work for a moment. This is many smaller gifts received through multiple channels, web, mail. This is more transactional. And that piece is definitely mechanized, and maybe rightfully so. I think that's fine. What I think has not changed is that at its deepest roots, it's still a conversation between people.
And oh my God. Yes. You know? I was reading Henry Nouwen this morning, who wrote A Spirituality of Fundraising. And he defines fundraising as a call to conversation. And then there was another book that I was looking at, of course, you know, kind of trying to get my head on straight to chat with you guys, that was talking about philanthropy as a response to the human condition. And then Lynn Twist, who we all know, talks about it being sacred and intimate. And Kathy LeMay, who posted on your wall, David, was also talking about how fundraising, fundraisers are mission makers. And what I do hear is like, the heart of the work can be universalized, right? Like if it is centered on the human condition, like that transcends organizational type. How we do the work is not universal. And so there's this like lack of a conversation about the heart of the work. And for me, you can't have the doing without the being. Like you can't even, and there's probably other pieces to that on the continuum between being and doing, like how you root yourself in the work, how you stay healthy in the work, how you relate to the work, how you address your own money issues in relation to the work. Like there's a lot larger sort of context rather than just waking up day after day to like, here's 10 tips to close a gift or five right. ways you can enhance your Giving Tuesday, which for like young fundraisers doing this work, I mean, I remember doing that and annual fund tips were helpful. You know, like yeah. I'm not knocking those tips. Right. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Well, and I love one thing you said in the post, which made me laugh because I used to work in consulting was there. And no matter what you do, like sometimes it won't go well. And sometimes you do absolutely nothing. Like I have always said that is like every fundraising campaign I've ever seen, there's always some unexpected humongous gift that came about from really nothing. Right. So it's like, that just made me laugh to think about that. So
yeah, someone brought up on my original post that they would argue, and I so appreciated this, that that gift that we thought came out of thin air was actually pre-qualified years and years before. And I have seen that too. Like I have seen, you know, I worked on an endowed chair that a friend worked on, that another colleague worked on, and it took, you know, 5 years before that closed and I was long out of the organization. Someone new just walked in and closed in a $3 million chair at emergency medicine that we had worked on. The same with this Center for Compassion that closed and took 10 years. And I've also seen literally a fundraiser be at a talk at the right place at the right time. And a major donor went up to him and said, hey, can you send me a proposal about this by Monday?
Yes. Yes. Well, David, I mean, you and I feel that in our own, you know, in our own engagement, right?
Yeah.
With our own business building, like it's, you can do all the right things and then sometimes the unexpected surprises. Yes.
Well, and I, you know, I like to say, and I've been working on my spirituality muscle for the last 10 years. And I think David and I have probably yapped about this quite a bit because there's a lot of overlap there. Like I think, and I come from a Jewish background, but I think faith is something that can go into this conversation. And I work with a lot of integrative health organizations where I say, you know, we can't just meditate for abundance, right? Like I worked with a board, then I literally said, we can meditate and we can set a course in action.
Well, yeah. So I like that. There is the the being and the doing. We're not suggesting that fundraisers do nothing. It is a question. Don't do anything. You know, there is, though, the doing has to come from the being, like who you are. And Janice and I talk about this a lot. So the first step is, like, you really have to, at the core, know who you are as a fundraiser, and then you can go out and, or know who you are and what you're up to in the world, period. And then go out and do something.
Yeah, you know? I think this, I'd love to bring in, Jennifer, your holistic mindset approach, because I think that a lot of the response we're getting on LinkedIn was like, people are excited to have this conversation and they want to have like a, you know, a sense of like, what can we do, you know, as well?
Of course, right?
So why don't you kind of unpack this idea that you bring to organizations with the holistic mindset?
So I think there's two things that I'd like to say about this, which also tie to what David was just saying. So when one of the first pieces I wrote was Awakening the Authentic Ask. And it was really, everyone, it drew attention because people were like, oh, what's the authentic ask and how do I do it? You know, the same thing that you just said. And when I have submitted it to...
Let me be inauthentic about my authentic ask.
Yeah. Like, teach me how to do it. And you wouldn't be surprised when I say that when people ask me to do this at conferences, they're like, what are the learning objectives? How do you teach them how to do it? Do authenticity. And we talked about this with regards to compassion, you and I, David, online. But one of the things I say about authenticity, which is the centerpiece of the holistic mindset, is that or holistic methodology really, is that it's about mindset first and method, and then methods, mm-hmm. right? So I have had the privilege of working with some amazing healers, both personally and as a fundraiser. I raise money for Integrative Health. I've consulted for at least like 7 holistic health related organizations. So I learned by watching them about how holism and health, like health creation, go hand in hand. And so as I was looking at why fundraisers get burnt out, you know, where like trying to diagnose it like a healer, I started to break up the organization into pieces like medicine, Western allopathic medicine does first, right? Break us apart to put us back together. And I identified like the individual, the organization, the functional, then the donor, then the world. Mm-hmm. And at the center of that, or donor, community, and world, and I've created all these different diagrams as if I'm some, you know, holistic health
practitioner. One of the things that's coming up for me as you're sharing is that I noticed in certain times of my life when I couldn't be myself, like if I had to fit into some mold, I was just with a group of leaders last night. We were having this conversation about like being institutionalized, right? So when you're working in an organization, there are certain norms and values. And sometimes I noticed I had to be inauthentic to fit in. And that was a choice to fit in. And that can be very unhealthy. Like, it can be very energy draining. So I don't know. If, for the audience, if you know, if you're feeling like that, like you're a misfit, and it doesn't feel right to you, that can really be life sucking as opposed to life giving.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And one of the things that I think I learned as a younger fundraiser, I was shocked that I was able to do this for myself, but that was the start of my journey. So in big matrixed organizations, you inherit your service line, right? Like I inherited anesthesiology, emergency medicine, like all the dark horses, genomic medicine, stem cell research, things that people didn't want to touch with like a 10-foot pole. And I remember, and I wrote about this, I wasn't planning on sharing this, but I went to see the head of anesthesiology who actually ran the pain management program. And I was just really honest. I was like, how am I going to sell anesthesiology? You know, people don't even see their anesthesiologist. And he told me a story about how many people were in chronic pain and that anesthesiology and pain management is much bigger than just getting drugs put into your vein when you're in, you know, surgery. Mm-hmm. And I left that day and it was like a switch flipped. And I was like, wow, this is about zooming out and like, you know, connecting to myself in relation to the work. Like I have pain, physical pain from a lot of things and emotional pain, and then connecting to the pain of the world. And I went back and I was young. I mean, this was over a decade ago. And I talked to my team about how our strategy has to be about finding a way to relate to the work, because we're going to keep inheriting bits that feel so disconnected. Like, why do we have to raise money for engineering and medicine? It's like robots or capital, right? Capital initiatives get the most resistance, right? Everyone's like, no one's going to invest in capital. And I'm like, what if you tell the story from the inside out instead of the outside in? It's not about the bricks and mortar. It's about what hearts and minds are going to be touched inside that building. And how do you connect with that? That's where I think there's a little bit of a chasm in our field, is like we have, and this overdoing, we haven't created space. I just gave myself goosebumps, but like to created space to actually feel the work. And that's where I see so much pain, and hence, and then betrayal and all the things I talk about in the Chronicle article. When a colleague calls me and tells me that she doesn't like her job until she can talk to me about it. Like, she feels so stressed there, but then when she gets to share what happened in a neuroscience clinic that was a direct result of her connecting with faculty and connecting with a donor, that's where there's like magic, and she can feel it in her body. So like, how do we, and I think maybe your retreats are going to be doing this, David, hopefully, you know, like getting us into the feeling of the work, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. That's, we do, at Fundraising Leadership, we do spend quite a bit of time on the being of a leader, and not so much of our training or coaching about the doing of leadership, because that can manifest in lots of different ways. And same thing with fundraising work. It's connecting to who you are. And sometimes that just takes, like, if you had said this to me, or if I these words would never have come out of my mouth 10 years ago. Like, you know, so it's really kind of a bit like, what do you mean? Like, who I am? I know who I am. You know, well, actually, maybe you do, maybe you don't.
I mean, I, you know, sometimes I think this is part of like our adult growth trajectory, like, you know, and also the burnout, you know, when my rose-colored glasses had to shatter in order for me to like retint them with roses again, you know, all the things. But I, you know, I still think that there's a way to create healthy spaces and healthy organizations and meaningful work that fundraising is a part of. And it's unfortunate to me that a field that's defined as a love of humanity is in such turmoil. And I've been waiting for someone to say, it's not in turmoil. You know, like, I don't write to be right. You know, I write for someone to be like, I work in the healthiest environment, and I actually don't see anyone burning out or leaving or toxic leadership and all the those things. So I'm hopeful those stories, which is why I'm collecting authentic asks. Like, I want people to like share stories that are powerful and potent that they can go back to and say, wow, this felt really good, instead of like, I didn't meet my $5 million goal, or well, maybe I can't that's my doors open.
Maybe that's what we could start to steer folks. Well, what do you want to, what do you want to give folks something to try, you know, in the vein of authentic connection to heart and to self, like, and reconnecting to the purpose of our work? What do you have in mind for the folks listening to the podcast?
Well, thank you. You know, my thing, again, you know, one of my, as you said, fundraiser, thinker, writer, like, writing has always been a source of healing for me. As long as I can remember, like, probably since I was a kid. But for the last decade, I've been training in writing for health and facilitating writing as a wellness practice, really, as an in group settings in the States and in Mexico. And what I've seen is transformation that can happen when you connect head and heart through the pen. And, you know, that was not my, I didn't coin that. I think, you know, a lot of people have talked about how writing can be, can connect head and heart, and So in to spare you all the science behind writing for health, I would say that an opportunity to kind of rebalance the like pendulum, if you will, would be to consider taking some time, you know, whether it's just a daily gratitude exercise related to your work or to spend, you know, 5 to 10 minutes writing why you're called to this work in the first place. Mm-hmm. You know, to your earlier point, I hate to prescribe more doing, you know,
right.
Meditate, do yoga, write in a journal, go for a walk.
I'll share with you. I did a similar exercise. It's so interesting. Again, I was with this group last night and we had this group do an exercise, a writing exercise, like you're suggesting for the audience, where we asked them to write down, just journal about things that bring them joy. That was the exercise.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah. And it was so interesting because and then we gave them a little something to do, like go out on an artist date. It comes from Judy Cameron's work, right? And so, I've got Julia's book here. So I went back to my book, and it turns out I did this exercise 5 years ago. I had written down all these things that bring me joy. And then I got to compare my list, and surprisingly, like 90% of the things that brought me joy 5 years ago bring me joy now. So
wow,
this is the invitation that you're offering the audience, is to just take some time. There's not a lot of doing in writing. Like, it can be as simple as just a short little list of things that...
Well, and I think one thing that's been clear from the feedback is people want both. They want the yes and. You know, we're not none of us are saying, like, don't do things, but we're saying, like, exactly that. Like, how do we bring the pendulum back, right?
Yeah.
And this is a beautiful way to sort of express, you know, to yourself, like, what is it? You know, one of the things that you talked about a lot, Jennifer, was like, why does our work matter, right? Like reconnecting yourself, like truly reconnecting yourself to like, what was the spark that brought you here? Mm-hmm. And I think when we remember that, it creates a resilience, right? Like even when things are challenging or we have to overcome things, when we really are like grounded in that place of where we're coming from, then we can have that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the larger sort of invitation I have for people in our profession, and not just people on the sort of front lines, if you will, is to really evaluate the way we're talking about this work, right? Like the, you know, there's language that, to David's earlier point, reminds us of the industrial complex, and this like systemization, this like dehumanization, and really I believe that this work is the most human work you can do. That, you know, I don't know how fundraising became something that felt icky over the last 2 decades, you know, that there's this reputation of ickiness, when really we're just sort of bringing people together in service of humanity. And so if we can start talking about it that way, like changing the lexicon, maybe that will change the way it feels for ourselves. That's where what I started doing for personally was like, I got to redefine this work for myself, or I'm not going to be able to stay in it. But then also for those who we hold ourselves accountable to, our teams, our bosses, deans, faculty members, boards, donors, if we're not like using transactional language, maybe even that can impact, you know, performance and connection and loyalty and all those things. So it's a call for, you know, a return, if you will, or a revival of the way we define our work. Yeah. I mean, that's just something I feel pretty heavily about, strongly about.
Mm-hmm. Yes, as I said, we've already sparked some great conversation. I know more people are going to want to read it, reach out to you. So what is the best way, Jennifer, for people to connect with you?
So LinkedIn is a good way, and they feel free, because I get these impulses to write and post frequently. And then they can absolutely email me at jennifer@jhcollectiveinc.com. I'd love to hear authentic stories or stories that, you know, plug the heart back into the profession, if you will. So if there are things that people want to share, I'd love to hear it.
Great. Yes. And we'll link to your website in the show notes. And so thank you so much. It was such a powerful, provocative, and like really beautiful article. So just
appreciate it. And Jennifer, I just want to acknowledge you for taking a stand for being human, putting the human being back in fundraising. Yeah.
Thank you. You're going to make me cry.
No, really, that's it's so important. So thank you for your work and your contribution.
Thank you. Thank you both. Yours too.
All right. Well, we're going to remind people to please subscribe if you haven't already. You can find us on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. And we're going to invite you to go put this into practice. Bye. Curiosity.